Just refer to us as Mr. Asher.
I'm Mr. Briefcase.
Briefcase one for me.
Yeah, try to work the mic as close as you can, guys. Don't, if you didn't, I'm going to lose you.
Okay.
You know?
Wonderful.
Yeah, we were talking about Elvis.
Yeah.
So what was your first reaction when you read the script? The end of the script and you read your story?
I wouldn't do this fast. Loved it.
Loved it.
I mean, have you ever seen anything quite like this? I mean, this is being seen as a love triangle that I don't think we've ever seen before, you know? A psychological love triangle. People are calling it the new war of the sexes and things like this. Respond to some of these quotes that we're seeing all over the place here.
Well, I thought it was a challenge to, it's a difficult route to make the guys fit. Bring the humor and the humanness to the beginning so that you pull the audience in. I think there's a point when we've gone on to the field that it's a difficult point and it's different. I thought it was hard to make that go off in a way that lent credibility and movement to it.
I liked the braveness and the courage of the film. I liked the fact that I didn't have to apologize as a character for doing bad things. I liked the fact that I can represent men in a way that I believe they actually behave. And in a lot of instances where power and control and money is involved and competition. I love Neil's view of his unrepentant view of that. I thought, you don't see that every so often. I remember just watching, before we did this film, Die Hard with a Vengeance, and I wanted Jeremy Irons to get away so bad in that film. It was painful, and I was so sad when he didn't. And I just felt like film, there's no characters that represent that, and I like that. And,
you're touching a lot of nerves here. Do you think that, how are women going to take to this film?
I think if anyone's going to be a brain woman that should be out there close to protesting, it's a 33-year-old male, white male, with a conscience and some semblance of a heart. These two are the women, they're the ones that are really kind of tall.
Do you think Howard is in his way, Jenna?
Yeah, I do. I think he's very in it. He at the end still thinks he's a good guy. And he's tortured and all, but it's the Howard of the world that's the choice. Moves forward. I think there's an interesting part of the script that attracted me in the beginning is in our culture today, it seems it's celebrated in the media and in the marketplace, this idea of reinventing yourself for your company. And I think that's basically the truth. I don't know. Basically, a sociopathic outlook. And I think that what Chad offers Howard in this microcosm, your getaway, is that chance to find, enter into a rite of passage that is similar in my mind to the military and corporate world, where it's about cutting yourself off from your feelings, you know, and what does it take to be an executive that can lay off 400 people and then get his $1 million bonus and go home and sleep at the gate.
Aaron, do you think there are a fair number of men out there who would try to pull something like this off?
Oh, yeah. I hear it more acutely now. I was on the subway the other day, and I live in New York City. I live in Tribeca. And like I've been saying, I went and hung out at these bars all the time to look at the different shags, and I was a bartender too, and they would come up and they would have their chili orange, you know, and they would expect me to have it for them, and then they would slowly get drunk and talk about their secretaries, their bodies, their wives, their kids, and they would do it the same sentence. They would go, I got to go to the wife, and I'm going to come back, and then I shot Karen today, the second Karen, and I'm doing this. Just like Brad and Howard on the show the other day, talking about the new secretary, how this one guy wanted to have sex with her in a much cruder way. Absolutely, I see him all the time. And that's why I think this film is pertinent, and that's why I'm not afraid of Shadow's character, because people have parents, people love them, they're all over the place, people admire them. I mean, I think Donald Trump and Rupert Murdoch and all these guys are forms of Shadow. If they weren't, they wouldn't be where they are. And look at, you know, how many magazines are dedicated to these people. And when they walk down the street, people turn their heads. I mean, it's a very... We've made these people glamorous. Not that they're bad people in hand, but they do bad things to get where they are. Actors will be glorified at.
Do you think there'll be a lot of business guys out there when they start hearing about this movie, which hopefully will get a lot of publicity, are going to screw them a little bit?
No. My brother, who's a business, called Neil the Genius. when he saw the intern scene, you know, the show me scene, it was a reflex action. He turned and he goes, that's exactly like investment banking. He was fired in the same way from investment banking and let go in the same kind of way, where he was being harassed by his boss because he didn't like him. He was threatened by him, so he was let go. No, I think this is a needed depiction of business today.
There's a story going on right now. I think maybe all you guys have heard about in Long Island, where a company is being sued for harassment. These guys would tell women if they didn't show up on time, either get docked in pay or get a spanking. Yeah, true story. It's in the papers. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that's going on. So this movie is apparently going to really, hit some buttons.
Well, I grew up in this small college town, and I remember in high school hearing this geek black guy talk about that. And they're touching things off, I think, a lot of like geeks together. They all end up coming down to Wall Street and playing these kind of colleges. But they were a game called Hogging. And they get Dancing Drunk, and it was the game who could bust these ugly girl. And I can't imagine that this was.
I was
Matt. 3 months of that, you get really tired of it.
Neil and I talked about it, and I studied antisocial behavior disorder, sociopathy, or whatever you call it. And then I did a lot of bar working. I went and just watched people in bars, listened a lot. What helped me a lot was to find out what these antisocial behavior disorder people are like. I mean, they have no remorse, they'll be perfect family men, and then they'll turn on their families and have no, they won't care about the ramifications. I think Chad was obviously like that. He had no feelings, and these people don't have any feelings.
Do you think business attracts people?
Absolutely. All the rewards in business are physical and have nothing to do with the humanistic or humanity. You know, I mean, the reward is you get your $1 million bonus. The reward is you get to go to Hawaii. You get to wear the next Armani. I mean, my brother, he couldn't even wear the wingtips that I'm wearing the wig right now because he would have been laughed at. You're not in the club. It's all about the club.
It was uncomfortable. That scene in the car where I lay into her on the overpass, that was awful. I mean, I still had to get out of the car and get back in. It's so ugly, because you can't tell your job, you can tell your guy this is the game, but it still feels the same. And so. Yeah, it was uncomfortable to do a lot of it.
What about the hearing impaired situation? Is there a different slack out of that? Either one, yeah.
Oh, he tells her he's deaf and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I think that was pretty hard to take.
Yeah. I imagine,
Well, Neil made a pretty, in one of these articles, I got these details, I've always found deaf people funny, and I guess the audience just kind of shifted a little bit when they heard that one.
Yes, you hear him say it, it's all left in the tone on the page.
Yeah, well. You had to be there?
Yeah, kind of.
Well,
No, it's like, and what Aaron said about we don't hide it, you know, we all laugh, but, and we all know what the girl said in the paper, he would tell you about that.
I didn't look at Chad as a bad person. I started to look at him as a person. He did some bad things, but I don't think the paradigm that he has in his life, I don't see that they were bad. And so I didn't play him as a villain. I tried to play him as a guy who just did work in his needs, you know, and his victories, you know, a couple of little victories. But I think he's a lonely person, but I don't think he is a bad person, but I didn't play him that way. I didn't look at him that way. I looked at him as he thought he was a great person. He had lost me like everybody else, and he just lived his life a little bit differently. So I didn't look at the cruelty that he did. He was doing Ian kind of favor, in other words. When he told him to pull out his path, he's like, I'm teaching you a lesson here that you will learn so that you can be better suited to, you know, gain money in this life, gain position, and gain what you want. I looked at it in those terms. I didn't look at that as cruel at all.
But you don't want us to be sympathetic to him, really, do you?
I don't care what you do. I mean, with the owner of a radio show,
not going off on a cold hold that thought, will you? So we don't, testing, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Got a 90-minute tape?
45. I'll make it short.
All right. You got to check those tapes. All right.
I'm sorry. I just feel like,
you started to say something about it. You compared it to a Radio Shack guy. Remember what you were saying?
He said, I don't care what you...
I don't care if they sympathize with Chad, or I don't want people necessarily to sympathize with him, but I'm saying Chad is a person, and, I would like people to think that he's a little bit more well-rounded. I mean, I'm sure he feels pain, or he doesn't really feel pain. I kind of lost track of what I was saying.
I love that there's one line. Chad says, she'll be reaching for the sleeping pills in a week, and you and me will laugh about this until we're very old men.
I haven't seen the film for a while.
He actually thought of that line a little bit. I thought that was a hard way to keep selling it to me. I thought if you're going to war, sort of, you don't talk about, oh, there'll be women and children bloody on the side of the road. You go to Grenada, you talk about, well, we will establish ourselves as a fucking fort. And everyone was like, yeah. You know, no one then, over 3 years later, looked at the picture and went, Jesus, what's he do? So I think there's sort of a, what Chad was offering, power, was that sense that, to be in this club that Howard had never been part of. And in preparing for it, I just thought about times in my life when there had been these magnetic sides, in college or in show business that you'll do to be along with them. It's like when I used to hitchhike, and I'd get picked up by really famous people and what you do to go along to get the ride. And some of them were very charismatic salesmen. And they would offer these things, you know, this and that, and you'd be like, oh, this guy's got a whole thing in there. He's got a whole angle, and boy, I kind of like that. And then they'd throw out some, you know, totally bigoted remarks, and they're like, oh, but you're in the car, and it's time to get to Albany, you know, and it's 8 miles away, and it's fucking cold out, and you're like, yeah, man. Yeah, it's just, you know, but you're kind of scared along the way, but you've gotten into this thing, and I think that was sort of an envy that goes with it, just like, do I have this stuff? Can I not lose below my, you know, chest and make it in business? And I don't think the military and business is always good for the business. It isn't, you know, we're not doing our thing fast.
Can you talk about the friendship between the characters? Because I was surprised that your character didn't pick up on what he was doing. We could see a little bit of it. We didn't know the extent of it until the end. But
this guy wasn't stupid. He got the money. Right. That's that was. He discussed that at length before we did this, trying to figure out what the case was. And I thought, and I mean, this can't be pretentious because we're going to finish this thing. But I just thought that what had happened was that I had been devastated by this girl before the start of the song. This guy, the exposition, and had been dedicated and did poorly at work for a while. And then to get over it, I just threw myself into work and outperformed everyone, including Chad, and passed his promotion. I think Chad and Howard, I was the guy that, if no one was around for Chad to stand by bar and have someone listen to his story, he'd say, you know, the last minute he'd stop by Howard's cubicle and say, "Hey, Howard, come on, let's get a drink." And I'd be like, "Hey, yeah, I'm here, I'm here to Chad." But, I questioned, before we were doing it, just what the dynamic was, you know, how much time did they spend together. But I think it's revealed now, the way it's structured now, so that it revealed my Achilles heel in saying how women can throw me off my game, you know, how I can shut down in a way when they betray me, and I hope that he picks up on that.
I feel like you guys came to Paris with some tea. I'm not just a slip of short tea. Are you afraid of any speaking type chapter? You guys did a very good job.
I'm doing a film right now where I got my part pretty much off Chad.
It's too early to typecast yet, right?
Yeah, not typecast, but people are, for me, they see the film or whatever, and they say, "Oh, he'd be perfect for that, our film, you know, like, just like that," which I'm extremely aware of in my career. But it's a film called Thursday. I play a drug dealer kind of guy who 3 years ago we were partying with cocaine, making a lot of money, and my partner, whom I love, gets out of it and gets a good suburban life, and then I come back 3 years later and try to bring him back to it. So it has a lot of Chad qualities in it.
That was originally Wednesday it was called?
Yeah,
it's just back again.
So
typecasting sure was always going to worry about that, but you gotta understand, Ann got in a truck that was heading to Indiana, and I drove across to get hitchhikers to memorize the script last summer. This is very big for both of us, and, you know, if that means when you get work that's close to these characters, you know, we're out there.
So how do you guys feel about all the acclaim you did so well from the Sunday at the Panda? I mean, look at the poster. Everyone, the poster. How do you guys feel about it?
I'm lying.
This was done on a mini budget, right?
$3,000.
Yeah, how do you feel about everything that's going on? You picked up that Sony, it's the same.
I'm going
to... Yeah, but
did you expect that kind of reaction to this film?
No, we didn't expect it to get made. Mm-hmm. We didn't expect to finish the film. I mean... There was no expectation on the film. That's why I thought it was so good.
Now, towards the end, you know, it's the one film I've worked on a bunch of films that you always walk away and it's so fragmented. You're like, did we shoot that movie? It's so disjointed, so many different shots. Each time we finished a scene, because it's the way it's shot, as you can see, we knew we had it. We got, oh, well, we got that take. And that's what I'm saying, that's 30. We can say 25 scenes of movies, one take.
I'd say.
One take.
You know the tower scene and Tower Target? That was the one we got.
We got one.
That was pretty spectacular. And she went foot off.
I wanted, all sorts of stuff. The restaurant. You only got one.
The restaurant was
one. The corned beef woman. I mean, you know what I'm saying? We shot this in 11 days, 12 hours a day. 2 days were less than 8-hour days. We ran out of money. We ran out of film. Physically, the only thing we had money for was the film. The schedule was based on when the neighbors went on vacation and we stayed in their own air-conditioned house.
That's what I call them. I'm not sure what the real name is.
What is it?
Schlegels? I don't know.
Well, I'm a bone here. Thank you for your help.
We've heard stories, you know, of mini-budget movies where people max out their credit cards just to try to keep things afloat, you know. Did you guys...
But we were doing things like the continuity, usually on a film, you have Polaroid film. They were writing down what we looked like. Now, what are you doing writing that down? Let's take a...
Aaron and I pulled the 20.
They said the PM or whoever it was, they said, we're only allowed to take 2 Polaroids a day. I said, you're kidding me. So Matt and I went out and bought Polaroid film. I said, you take as many as you want. The producer's mom was making this Polaroid film.
I think that was many Polaroid cameras and papers.
Yeah, I mean, I got up there on an 18-wheeler truck.
Yeah.
Which, going back to lying and believing people, this guy told me lies the entire time while I was riveted telling about Nam, how this guy had a shocker when he was a kid.
How about the 800 number? We should mention.
Yeah, the 800 number.
Biker 800 number. That tells.
I get there and I talk to Neil, and Neil looks at me and goes, hey, the guy was 13 years old, Nam. And I was like, the entire thing was a lie. And I was like, for 2 days, I was going, you're kidding me.
There's four guys that I picked up hitchhiking that did no Chad's role. Not quite as well.
Sorry, it's trash.
Yeah, but I get out of the car and be like, okay, you can ride. You don't have to pay for gas, but you got to be honest. And this little stone is good in it. Coming out of Colorado, can buy it fairly easy.
You're lucky you're alive.
Yeah. But I mean, get this in. That was the spirit of the thing. It was just,
We thought we had something special. We thought Neil offered us a great script, obviously. I mean, great characters. Tracy is phenomenal in the film. So when we were doing it, we were just like, we would finish the scene and go, well, Tracy thought it was pretty good.
And we'd be like, that's good, right? That's like kind of cringe, laugh, funny, right? It's awkward, funny, and we're like, okay. Right, Casey, we literally didn't have me come down. There's no air conditioning. He goes up to 3 in the morning, and the other two at the kitchen table, like, can I stop in this movie? Can I stop? And finally, we came up with this idea that the tangible property was, you know, A equals B. You'd be like, if you don't think I suck, and I don't think she sucks, then I don't think any of us suck in this movie. We just need waves of panic.
But here you've got a movie with no graphic sex or violence. But a lot of distributors thought it was too hot to handle.
Yeah.
They didn't want to touch it.
In fact, we talked to Harvey Weinstein and Pan. We were at Hotel Bacass, and I pulled him aside because he's a huge mountain of man. I don't know how I did that. And I said, and he said, hi, I'm Aaron. He's been a couple of men, and this is Neil. And he's like, love your fucking film. Love your fucking film. Couldn't pick it up. Sunny sucks, but you know, we'll do this. And you know, it's like, here's this guy. He was more than that. He was like, you're going to be dope. Don't worry if these offers don't come right now. They'll come later. This is a great film. You know, it was like crazy. And we were surprised that Mary Max didn't pick us up. And when we heard that, that Harvey thought it was too hot to handle, we were like, whoa. Nothing's going to happen with this film. We were very surprised about that. I don't know.
In reality, the words in this movie that are the weapons.
It's Neil's script. It's his audacity to make his character have no closure in the film. His viewpoint, his words, his juxtapositions, his music. He's got this jungle of upbeat music in between when Christine cries. I get weepy every time I see it when she cries. And in the car scene, it's so beautiful. And then Neil just says, fuck you. And he puts this music on, you know? It's just devastating.
That's like kind of Robert Bly tribal modern speech to it.
I mean, this is Neil Vision. This is Neil who Neil says he's not. But I mean, this is what he wants to put on screen. And he's not apologizing for it, which is, I think, is a beautiful thing.
Now, you guys said you fought over some lines occasionally, but did most of it stay the way Neil wanted it?
Yeah. He added scenes that kind of filled it out from the play, because he had more letters in the movie.
Yeah.
That weren't in there. Quite a bit. Don't you think from the thrust back to the,
we cut out 30 minutes of dialogue.
Yeah, 30 minutes of dialogue. That thing at the airport went on another, the very opening scene. Yeah, and the bathroom scene, the cutaways to the feet, you watch some stuff there.
There was a lot of dialogue.
But Joel Fox did it in all of them. You know, it's very standing over and tearing it down. But you can see it's a difficult film to cut because of the way it's shot. You don't have inserts. You don't have things to go to.
It was originally supposed to be black and white. Yeah, Neil Fox would be black and white. We shot it in color, but everything was done on black and white, and Neil would call me up and he could laugh at me, but they wanted to be color, I don't know. But then he saw the color print and was like, yeah, this is great. He's very European star film, and I hope this achieves some of that feeling, you know.
Look, we all know John Weston. Yeah, you're in the middle.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm the same one in the we export the power, and then it's that power that way. We have it once things can commodity. Everything's just a service.
Isn't Sherry Lansing a nice person when she hits the fan? You know, the company. Mm-hmm. She's the CEO for Paramount or whatever it is. Or, you know, I don't know Sherry, so I'm sorry.
But do women get back at men in not in the same way that you know you did in this movie? I mean, they do it more subtly, I think. Don't you think so?
I've been tremendously hurt by women in very subtle and sly ways. Absolutely, and it's struggling. I don't think it has a men-women issue. I think it's an issue of how much you love power and control and what you're willing to do to get it. I think if the desire is there, you know, there's means to an end, you know. I'm not saying, are men tougher than women in business or are women tougher than men? I mean, I don't know, but I know that some women in my life who are, you know, either managers or agents, whoever they are, they can throw some punches like this and be mean as men. I mean, my agent, I go in there, she's playing solitaire, she's on the phone, she's talking to her client, gets off the phone and just like, fuck.
A power trip, right?
No, she's doing it. I love my agent. What I'm saying is, when you have to get things done, you get things done. And if you have to plot to get me in another film with this person, blah, 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 or Matt, or whatever it is, you just can't do it the opposite.
Hey, everyone wants a mad dog lawyer, you know? So I want to have this case that they can hold up and say, you know what, I can fucking fix this on you. But eventually that person is going to have to go home and have a family or some kind of life. And, I mean, we all do that. It's a nuclear...
What do you guys feel about being released as an independent film? There's already big blockbusters, and there's also this castling of independent films coming out this summer. How do you guys feel about that? What do you think is going to stand in the
I'm excited about it. I think it's time's perfect. I think that you know people want something bigger. I mean, they want to be the challenge. That's what mine do. Maybe that like.
Do you think that audiences are still are into independent films still that it's still an
important thing?
I think it's bigger than ever.
I'm naive, but I think that's where the momentum is going. I think that people we were just talking about what was this movie, Titanic.
Yeah,
what do you say? It's pushing $300 million. I mean, do the math on how many in the company and then if you can do on that, it's kind of mind boggling. I mean, admittedly, this is a miracle bullet. We were blessed in location and everything. We would turn around every place we go. We went to that bank, for instance, walk inside this lobby that's given to us, this miniature of the Empire State Building, built by the same guy, you know, 1930s Art Deco lobby. One side is this very beautiful, open woman, and the other side is this guy tribal in a loincloth. I mean, you couldn't have paid an art director.
People are definitely interested in seeing a good film that has to do with their lives, and I think this film is like that. You know, I don't care. Maybe a boat shooting across the ocean is pertinent to our lives, but maybe it's not. You know, but I think we have to examine the relationships with coworkers, spouses, girlfriends, boyfriends. I think that's important. I think people want to see that. I mean, how many people went out to use Goldie? You know, I hear, oh, it's great, blah, 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 it's a film that we can sit in, I don't even know what films are hitting right now, but people are interested in human relationships, I hope. So I think it's going to be, it'll make $10 at least.
Some people are talking about your Oscars for this film. Look at Peter Travers up there, one of the best pictures of the year.
Damn right.
And what about the comparison here? And I see one critic here says that physically across between William Hurt and Michael York.
Oh, man, you'll love it.
Aaron is actually the love child.
That boggled my mind, but... Well, that's Emmanuel Levy. I don't care what he says about it.
Thanks a lot.
I got to ask some Sam Peachy in this film, Ship of Fools.
What about Fargo?
Oh, yeah, it's going to be a pilot of Fargo. You know Norm, the husband of Hanker guy? Fortunately. CBS, what is it, went another direction? They went with more. It was a very nice, a no-name ensemble piece that Kathy Gates directed. And he's proud to produce. But they went with more name kind of costume.
It'll happen, don't cry.
Well, what about you?
Oh, I'm trying to pay rent.
Yeah.
In and out.
No, that's nothing. That was nothing. I don't even know I've done that. I played one of that film Freddy, but it was just like Scott Rudin and the screws and stuff. You know, look, things are looking up.
Where do you guys make your home now?
I split my time. My girlfriend lives in Venice, California. And I have a place here. So I'm kind of running around
a lot. You got a muscle beach?
Yeah. It's steroids. And I didn't
pick him up in the gym.
Look at me at the gym. I don't need to go to the gym. Look how thin he is. And especially, I've got a funhouse and collection on it.
Right. I like the hair.
They give you a nice hair. Oh, yeah, I'm just too. If I've seen Aaron's tie color in my own hair. If you guys didn't recognize
him. All right. Aaron, where you live?
I live in New York City. Yeah, that's where I
hang out.
It's my home is.
Can you guys help you?
Yeah.
That's right. Thank you very much.